Island Records was founded in Jamaica in 1959 by Chris Blackwell, a young British man with a love of reggae and few ambitions. From humble beginnings, Blackwell's label went on to be home to an eclectic range of artists, including Bob Marley, Cat Stevens, Grace Jones, and even U2. Well, this May, Island Records will celebrate its 50th birthday with a series of extraordinary gigs in the capital, including performances from many of those artists still alive, testament to the respect and admiration Blackwell still commands within the music industry. In a series of podcasts, exclusively for guardian.co.uk/music, Blackwell talks about the history of his innovative record label and reminisces about some of his favourite artists.
I'm very proud to see Island Records still alive and operating 50 years after it started, really as an amateur attempt at recording some music that I really liked. It's been a great trip and not anything that I ever thought would grow into what it did. It wasn't planned. There was no business plan written for this, no structure, really. It was just a lot of random thought and actions that came together. And looking back on it, I must say I'm proud and actually almost a little surprised at how unique I think it was. The music I listened to as a child was purely classical music, because my father loved classical music. He used to play particularly Italian and German opera, Wagner, Puccini, Verdi, etc. And he used to play it at a deafening volume. Later on, I heard a lot of Latin music, basically, because Latin music growing up in Jamaica would come from Cuba, or indeed in the 40s and 50s, there was a lot of Latin music, basically, that I heard. I was never really interested or excited about popular music. It wasn't really my kind of thing. I never really liked it much. So when I went to school in England, I became friends with somebody who actually turned me on to New Orleans jazz, Jelly Roll Morton, Pine Top Smith, music of this nature. And I loved that music. I really, really loved it. For a long time, that's all the music I listened to. And then little by little, I kind of musically went up the Mississippi, I guess, and started to like St. Louis music, Kansas City music, Chicago music, and then eventually started to get into music from New York and also on the West Coast. And it was all jazz, really, that I liked. That was the only music, really, that I listened to. So how I actually started was from that perspective, loving jazz music. So I was in Jamaica, and I had a concession to teach water skiing at the Half Moon Hotel. A friend of mine, actually a cousin of mine, was the daughter of the person who owned the Half Moon Hotel. And she booked the music for the hotel. And the band she booked was a band from Bermuda. It was a blind pianist called Lance Haywood, who was a sort of cocktail jazz pianist. I loved the music and for some reason just thought, well, I'd love to record them. I don't know why particularly, but it was just something that I wanted to do. So I rang up the studio in Kingston, which was owned by a man called Ken Curry, who owned a company called Federal Records. And I got a Volkswagen van, drove into town with the band, went into the studio, recorded the album in a matter of a few hours, because in those days one was recording in mono. So a lot of the reason that there's so much time required to make a record today is because the more tracks you have, the more length of time it takes you to make a record, because essentially you're delaying your decisions because you have the option to do so. But when it's mono, really you are going for a performance, and if the band were a band that played regularly, those performances would come within one or two takes. So probably took about 4 or 5 hours to make this album, and then we got in the van and drove back to Half Moon Hotel when I went back to teaching my water skiing. So with the tapes, I went up to New York and took them and got them mastered. There was a studio called Olmsted Studios that I went to. They mastered it for me. And I also had an album cover made, and the stampers I had made in New York, and I went back to Jamaica, went to the pressing plant, had the stampers made, got the records, had the covers made, and took them around to try and sell them to the shops. Well, of course, nobody was interested in a jazz band that nobody had ever heard of before. So I sold very few. I managed to sell perhaps a couple of dozen, that was all. But in the hotel is where I sold most of the records because, of course, the guests in the hotel heard the band, liked the band also, but never really sold a lot. But I just loved the whole process. I just loved it. I knew that was really what I wanted to do. So I started to get more and more into music then. I gave up my water skiing job, and I started to sort of go to different sessions in Jamaica, sound system sessions. Also, I'd go to different shows. There was one particular show that was put on regularly by somebody called Horace Forbes. Horace Forbes was somebody who really liked to sing and rather fancied himself as a singer along the lines of Bing Crosby. And of course, nobody was really interested in listening to him. So he became a promoter. So he'd promote the shows and the lots of singers that people were interested in hearing. He would promote and would give him an opportunity then to sing himself. And it was at one of these shows that I heard somebody whose name was Wilfred Edwards. We later changed his name to Jackie Edwards. And he sang very much like Brooke Benton. And in fact, he sang Brooke Benton songs. In fact, all the singers basically sang covers of American R&B songs. So I really liked the singer. And after the show, I went backstage and I asked him if he'd like to make a record. And of course, he said yes. And then there was another couple of guys around. One was called Laurel Aitken. The other was called Owen Gray. And it turned out that the first record I released actually was by Laurel Aitken, which was called Little Sheila. And the other side of it was called Boogie in My Bones. And I released that, and it went to number one. And it was incredibly exciting, as anybody who, you know, has ever produced a record or worked on a record. It's incredibly exciting when suddenly you hear it. Then I released Wilfred Edwards' first record called Your Eyes Are Dreaming, and that went to number one. And then I released Owen Gray, which was called Please Let Me Go, and that went to number one. So you can imagine how excited I was about this. You know, I just really felt that I'd found my groove, as it were. Now, I think the reason these records all did so well, because they were the first records, really, in Jamaica, which were made by Jamaicans for Jamaicans, because the records before that were made in Jamaica were more made for tourists. They were like Calypso records or Mento records. But this was made to try and reach the same market that would, or the same demographic, I guess you'd say, of the people who would go to the sound system dances. And during this time, I became friends with the various sound system guys. The main one was Coxon. The others were King Edwards, Duke Reed, and later Prince Buster. Prince Buster used to work for Coxon when I first met. He used to drive the truck for Coxon. I then started to go to New York, and I'd buy records. I'd go and sort of go and look through record stores and look for records that I thought would work in Jamaica, records that I personally liked. And then I'd cross the labels off them and take them back and sell them to the sound system guys, because the sound system guys always needed new music. And if they had music that nobody else had, it would put them ahead of the rest of the pack. So I was able to buy the records, which was about 43 cents at that time, and take them back and sell them in Jamaica for like £100, which was 200 times or whatever a record cost in New York. So I got to know all these sound system guys. But then, of course, after a little bit, they thought, well, you know, this guy here is making these records and we can make records. So then they all started to make records, particularly Coxon at first. And Coxon really is the person who really is the man who invented Jamaican music. The music I had was not ska. It was sort of like an attempt at R&B, when he started making his records, they had a rawness and an energy and an excitement which didn't really exist in my records. Duke Reid also made some great records, but he wasn't anything like the sort of music person that Coxon was. Incidentally, all these guys basically had liquor businesses, because what would happen is you'd book a sound to come and play, and the sound you'd pay them, and they'd come and they'd have the liquor concession, and then the people who booked them would collect the money at the gate. So that was really how the whole sort of music business worked in Jamaica. So after a bit, I found out that I was selling more records in England than I was in Jamaica, because the Jamaican community in England, which was really quite huge in the late 50s, early 60s, started to hear about the music coming from their home country and were very excited about it, very keen on it. And the first company that started to take these records was a company called Melodisc, which was a jazz label in England. They started a subsidiary called Bluebeat, and Bluebeat released a lot of these records, some of the Coxon records, some of the Duke Reid records, etc. And I worked with another jazz label called Esquire, and they had a label for Jamaican music called Starlight. And so my music went through Starlight.